The mob cried out for blood. Someone had to be punished, had to take the fall. It had to happen. The authorities really had no choice. But enough about Martha. Thanks, Ron. Dealing with the passion in our society, about the passion, the movie, The Passion of the Christ, is very complex because we are dealing with at least three primary distinctions. One is about a movie as a work of art. The other is how that movie represents the stories as portrayed in the Christian Bible and as the Christian Bible interprets and reinterprets Hebrew scriptures. The third is, what is the effect of a film like this on the world? And those are the primary issues, and when we mix them together, the conversation and our thinking becomes muddied and muddled. There are also lots of other issues. Issues about how should the world react, how should the Jewish community have reacted before the fact, during the fact, and after the fact, and what is it that we can predict? First of all, as a work of art, having seen the movie twice and carefully looked at it and analyzed it, I think that it fails as a work of art on all kinds of levels. It's just not, in my view, and this is, I'm not a professional movie critic any more than the rest of us are professional movie critics. We're all semi-pro movie critics and restaurant critics. And so I'm not pulling any rank or Trump on this one. I think it's bad art. It's bad art because it's over the top, because its violence is pornographic. It's slow motion whipping and flaying and flogging. It's bad art because it takes what another movie called The Greatest Story Ever Told and turns it into a look at a minute but theologically important part of the story. As I stand here waiting, and I did turn my cell phone off, which was very hard to do, for my granddaughter to be born, I am so aware of the joy of conception, of planning a child, of gestation, of the birth process, of welcoming new life. And what The Passion of the Christ in Mel Gibson's version does is to take all of the story and to focus only for 2 hours on screaming hard labor. Now, people scream in hard labor. It is painful, can be agonal, but it's not the whole story. It's true, but by being so narrow, it becomes a distortion on what is the total human experience of wanting and having a child. So I think artistically the movie fails because it does that. I think it fails also because its violence is so extreme that it's like watching either pornography or professional wrestling. It becomes, no one's put those two things together before, but probably won't again. But what I mean by that is that it is over the top and numbing. You might be shocked at the first views, at the first stripes, at the first slaps. But after a while, you become numb to it. As in wrestling, you see people taking blows and strikes and being hit and being bounced, and you know that there is some pain, but you also know that human beings do not get up from some of the blows that they seem to be taking in a wrestling match. And some of that is going on in this movie also. At some point, the flaying is so intense that the pieces of skin are hanging off and the mind just goes, special effects. And you understand that it's a makeup and it's a suit and that there are flaps that are attached, because even the amateur understands that a human being would not have lived in order to carry a cross down the Via Della Rosa, and in order to be strapped to it, a human being would have died. So with all of this concentration on the violence and the over-the-topness of the violence, one has to ask, what's the point? And there is a theological point to it for Mel Gibson. And the theological point to it is the belief among some Christians, not Christendom in general, because there's no such thing, there's a huge spectrum of belief, but among some Christians, that Christianity has become too liberal, that they've lost the sense of what gave them birth, which was death, that Christianity has become all about Easter and the sunrise through the glowing window, and has forgotten Good Friday and the agonal suffering of the suffering servant. Now that is, whether it's my poetry or not, that is a valid theological, Christological point that somebody can make. I think Gibson made it badly. What was his intent? Was it to inflame? Was it to incite? Was it anti-Semitic? I'm not a mind reader. I don't know. Here's what I will say about that, however, because I am a Bible reader. Let me say something good about the movie. The use of Aramaic is very good and very accurate and makes some very interesting distinctions, and I was wondering whether or not the distinctions would be made between two forms of king, the Jewish word for Mashiach, the Messiah, and the regular word for king, Melech, and in the Aramaic, they make the distinction. There is some considerable care put into the authenticity of the movie, and by authenticity, I mean faithfulness to the gospel narratives. What actually may have happened before the gospels were edited in their final form is a whole different category, but the Christian gospels exist as they exist, and it is a relatively faithful, if obsessive, look at part of it. Except for two very important interpretations that are put into the movie. One of them is that Pilate is a tortured bureaucrat who doesn't really want to kill him. He agonized. This man is innocent. He has done nothing. And Pilate has this conscience, and it troubles him deeply, and it troubles his wife deeply. Nowhere is this in any part of the gospel. This is an addition and an interpretation, and an interpretation that has consequences. So not only is Pilate this semi-sympathetic character that's just, you know, it's just business, it's nothing personal, you know, I know the guy's innocent, but he's got to be whacked. And his wife is talking about, and this is such a nice man, and why are you doing this? And after the Romans beat and flay and stripe and flog him, Jesus, Pilate's wife comes with a cloth to give to Mary, mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene to absorb some of the blood. It's not in the book. And so its inclusion at least raises questions in terms of the exoneration of the Romans. Jewish community was, of course, concerned about it, because the Passion play and the depiction of the Passion has a history. It was used from medieval times all the way up through Hitler in order to instruct and inspire anger. The charge Christ killer is an old and an ancient one. The response for modern Christianity is Jesus died for everyone's sins, and that means that everyone then and since then and living essentially sinned in order for him to pay the ransom, the sin offering. So that it isn't the Jews. It's the Romans too, and it's everybody else who lived and who will ever live. That's the kind of mainstream Christian tradition. The problem in the real world is that when people walk out of a movie and feel that some sense of sadness and anger and look around, they're not going to burn down a pizzeria because there are no Romans. There are Jews, and there are temples and synagogues, and this can be inflammatory. Now, I'm hearing mixed results about what actually has happened since the movie opened. Some groups are saying, well, nothing has happened. You see, there has not been rioting in the streets. Synagogues have not been burned down. People have not been beaten. Other reports are that children are being taunted with the old Christ killer label because of that. And I don't know. The evidence in terms of what will happen is not in. I'm not greatly afraid in terms of anything going on in this country. I think that the movie is, as most pieces of art, whether good or bad, is a Rorschach. You will find what you are looking for. Haters will find a way to hate. Lovers will find a way to love. People who are of a forgiving spirit will hear the words, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do, and understand that. And people who want to be mad and have the adrenaline running will be mad and have the adrenaline running. But I think one of the points that gets missed in the Jewish community, which doesn't actually understand the symbolism, and to some extent in the Christian community, is the connection and the connections and the themes. He was beaten for our sins, scourged for our iniquities, stands mute at his trial, and though innocent, it pleases God that he go like a lamb to slaughter. That's not from the Gospels. That's from Isaiah 53 and the suffering servant. He rides a donkey to the place of his ultimate last destination. He carries the wood for his sacrifice up a hill and is bound on the wood to be sacrificed. That's not simply from the Gospels. That's the binding of Isaac, the Akedah, the story of Isaac riding the donkey and carrying the wood. The themes are interwoven and interconnected. And so that Judaism is born in terms of the story when Abraham takes Isaac to the hill and a ram is substituted and dies that Isaac and his seed might continue. Judaism is reborn out of slavery and darkness and death across the Red Sea and into the bright new light of day. After lambs are slaughtered and the doorposts of the house are marked with the blood of lambs. Judaism in its temple days before the destruction of the Second Temple was a sacrificial, saved by blood religion. It's easy to forget today because sacrifice is now about college education. It isn't about killing a goat or a lamb or a ram. It is a different kind of sacrifice and different kind of consecration. Christianity depends on the blood of the lamb to be Christianity. I think very few people, whether Jews or Muslims or Hindus or Buddhists, have much difficulty in the teachings of Jesus, of loving your neighbor, of loving your brother, because how can you love God whom you have not seen if you love not your brother whom you have seen? That all of the gospels of love are things that everyone can affirm. The theological differences are Christological. They aren't even so much the Trinity as what is the meaning of the death and of the blood of the Lamb. For Orthodox Christians, salvation comes through that blood. So that's a priestly function. Now, there's a scene in Michener's The Source where some visitor, a Christian visitor to a kibbutz, goes into this guy's office and there's a sign on the desk that says, "Yes, we did it." Because in some ways the defensiveness is not an effective strategy. Just as anti-Semitism has never been an effective strategy for a community or for a nation, the defensiveness also, whether accurate, is not an effective strategy. Always the Romans, but there are no Romans, so we'll settle for you. There is no salvation for Christians without the Jewish birth of Jesus and without somebody spilling the blood. If Jesus lives to die a ripe old age, there is no Christianity. There might be Jesusism and everybody can sign up, but there's no Christianity. So the symbols are important, and they are within the framework of the Gospels and the framework of Isaiah. They are all fitting, and the Jewish community had no real power in saying, don't depict this material in the Gospels because it causes trouble. These books have existed since 325 of the Common Era, and nobody has the right to tell another religion not to use their books. And there's plenty of material in the prophetic tradition, and this is one of the great distinctions in between Jewish and Greek traditions, particularly. It used to be said that when the Greeks did a statue of a man, it was a statue not of a man, warts and all, but a statue of man. The perfect ideal, built up like this with real arms and a six-pack, and really looked like something very special, even in California where we have so many like that. That was the Greek tradition. The Jewish tradition was that when you look from Abraham, who doesn't always act particularly well with Sarai and with Hagar, when you look at the men of Shechem, who are slaughtered even after they convert, there's ample material in Hebrew scriptures that show human beings as flawed, as complex, as we are capable of great things and capable of committing true horrors. Not that one group is immune and one group is dirty, but that we are all complex human beings capable of wonderful things and of terrible things. I don't have any question that this movie had a right to be made. I don't have any question that the Jewish community had a right to be concerned with it. I have a tactical question, which is, there's nothing better, and every Unitarian should know this, and every Catholic should know this, there's nothing more important to the success of a book than being banned in Boston. And a two-hour violent film in Aramaic and Latin would not have opened with $24 million without some of the publicity and the controversy that has turned it into a must-see, a cultural event like Roots, even if Danzig won't buy a ticket to it to profit. Buy a ticket to an Adam Sandler movie and Theater Switch. Mike Forman, I apologize. Okay. It's become a cultural event. And speaking without having had the information, of seeing it, of witnessing, of understanding what is important to the story and what was added on. What shows faith, what shows good faith, and what in that film shows bad faith is important to have an intelligent discussion. This being a fact is now an opportunity for communities to talk to each other, to do as Ken and his family have done, to open up a conversation, not that will end in theological, Christological agreement, but in understanding and a sense of respect for one another. These stories are part of our lives and of culture and of the story of Western civilization. A version of the story exists even in the Quran, where Jesus is born of a virgin, where he lives, but that he is not crucified in the Quran. And so there is no blood, there is no meaning to the death in the Quran. And Islam shares that with Judaism. There's so much that we can talk about, so much that we share in common, that fear and anger are not the most creative responses. Telling each other our fears is one thing, but panicking is another. Sharing our faith and our beliefs and our stories is one thing. Rejecting the others as being stupid or superstitious is quite another. For those who are saved by their sense of the death of Jesus and by the blood of the Lamb, I have no argument with or against. None. It is an ancient symbol. Its poetry does not sing to me, but there's lots of music that doesn't sing to me. And it doesn't mean that the music is wrong. What is right or wrong are not the symbols or the depictions, but what we do with them. The cross is described by Aristotle long before the birth and the death of Jesus. It is an ambivalent, not ambivalent, but I'm taking it apart, ambivalent, a symbol that has many meanings to it. It is the sign of Mithra. It is the sword in one aspect, and phallic, and it is female and recumbent in another aspect. What we do with the symbols, what we see and how we use them are the critical issues. The Passion as a film is what society will make of it. And so we engage in a dialogue with a film, as individuals, in a dialogue with a tradition, and across communities, I hope, in a dialogue about meaning and how we live out the values that teachers, perfect and imperfect, traditions, complex all, have handed down to us. It now is in our hands as human beings how we use the book, the story, the passion, and the movie. From now on, it's not Mel Gibson's fault. From now on, it's not the Jews' fault. It's not the fundamentalist's fault. From now on, humanity has this film and these issues. How will we deal with anger, with fear, with love, with openness? It is a hanging question. And all of us will make our own responses.